all the way from Providence, Rhode Island, in the Minute with Mary studio. Welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and what am I, a next-door neighbor? What are we doing here?
One of my favorite lines from this chapter, and there were a lot of them. This chapter is chock full of them.
This chapter is great.
I feel like that is going to become part of the Larson family.
Absolutely.
Lingo. What am I, an extra neighbor?
Anytime that we ever do something wrong, we don't get recognized for anything, it's just going to be, what am I, the next door neighbor?
I absolutely love it. And so friends, just in case you didn't know, this is actually chapter 9, The Woes of Mrs. Weasley.
Oh, there's one thing I do want to say before we continue on with the rest of our show and everything. I know that our schedule, as we are recording this, has been a little...
As we're recording live, okay.
Yeah. As we're recording all of these episodes as of late, has been a little wonky. And I want to say that I understand that, and I appreciate you for all of the listeners that are listening to us as it happens and as it's live. What I will say is that that should be ending very soon, because some of our major commitments are coming to a little bit of a halt.
Well, and anyone who has young children knows summertime is crazy. It's
summertime is bananas with kids.
It is.
So, but like I said, a lot of those commitments are coming to a halt, so we should be able to get back to doing these a lot more consistently. Rather. So
awesome.
I just wanted to
sauce.
Say that. That's all. That's all I got.
I appreciate that, Blake. Okay. I appreciate it. All right. So the quote that I wanted to read was, Mrs. Weasley smiled tremendously. Being silly, she muttered again, mopping her eyes. But Harry, closing his bedroom door behind him some 10 minutes later, could not think Mrs. Weasley silly. He could still see his parents beaming up at him from the tattered old photograph, unaware that their lives, like so many of those around them, were drawing to a close. The image of the Boggart, posing as the corpse of each member of Mrs. Weasley's family in turn, kept flashing before his eyes. Without warning, the scar on his forehead seared with pain again, and his stomach churned horribly. Yeah, I went dark and deep. Y'all are like, oh, she's going to pick the Fred and George being like, what are we, next door neighbors? That's one of my favorite lines.
Sure.
But this chapter here is so meaty.
Yeah.
And it's so long. For those of you who listen on the audiobook version, it's a 50-minute long chapter. It is a doozy, and so much happens in this chapter that we're here for it. So I'm really ready and excited to get into the show.
All right, you ready?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Little recap, in case you haven't read Chapter 9 of The Order of the Phoenix recently, this is the chapter where Ron and Hermione are announced that they're prefects. Harry is not. Harry's jealous. Then we, of course, get to see Mrs. Weasley's Boggart. And oddly enough, this chapter actually begins still in the Ministry of Magic as Harry is leaving after his full trial.
Yes.
So that's what happens. We're either in the Ministry of Magic or we're at 12 Grimwald Place. But that's what goes down.
So Mayor, what do you think about the choice for this chapter? The setting for it and the size of it, the flow of the chapter and what that all means.
It's a doozy.
I guess
my
question really is, should they have split this up into two chapters? Would it feel more natural if it was two?
You know, it's funny because we were listening to this, the audiobook version, just a little while ago on our way to and from a dog park. And I was pointing this out to you. I said, how interesting that, you know, we have the whole courtroom, we have the whole trial, the hearing, the previous chapter.
Yeah.
And yet the first several pages of this, the first couple of pages are still there. You know, it's leaving the hearing. It's Arthur Weasley saying, holy smokes, is everybody seeing Lucius Malfoy, you know, there. So part of me felt like, why didn't they just tuck that into the hearing chapter? But on the flip side, if you're looking at this as the Weasleys as a whole, as how the Weasleys are being affected with all this, including Harry as one of their family members, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
It is a very chunky chapter because it includes that, not clunky, but chunky, I'm saying, okay? Like some chunky peanut butter where you're like, all right, there's some things to chew on here and like figure out. We spend time with the Weasleys. I mean, honestly, this could have just been like hanging with the Weasleys chapter,
yeah.
Whether it's Arthur Weasley at the ministry, Ron getting his prefect badge and everything that that entails for both Ron and Harry, and then going on to Molly's Boggart situation. So to me, it should just be the woes of the Weasleys.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
Chunky peanut butter?
Yeah.
Might be the worst thing that's ever been invented. I know,
you are not a chunky peanut butter fan, and that's okay for you.
I am out on... I think there were years where we couldn't get normal peanut butter in this house, and then finally...
In our house?
Yeah, in our house, yeah. You would get the brown one, then you would get the chunky one, then you'd get the one with the oil on the top.
The natural ones.
Then we would get the one that you had to put in the fridge. And I remember going to her, I remember saying, Mary, I just want that
normal.
Blue Skippy.
Give me just the normal peanut butter.
I don't want the dark blue Skippy. I want just that light blue Skippy.
Oh my goodness.
Just get me the regular Skippy. Maybe even Jif.
So now
I'll
Blake is
Jif.
In charge of the peanut butter. It's all going out the window. Well, friends, we do want to, of course, remind you that this podcast is brought to you free thanks to the support that we have at our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. Now,
yes.
I know a lot of little listeners tune on in, so you're not able to contribute. Know that like just listening means so much.
Or writing an email or sending,
yes.
You know, just sending us messages.
Yes,
on
submitting
whatever.
A review. You can still submit reviews. And of course, Apple Podcasts, written reviews, all the best. They're chef's kiss. But if you are able to, you can donate for as little as $2 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And those little $2 add up so that Blake and I can afford to do the website fees and the electricity and do all this to continue to bring this free content worldwide mm-hmm. to other Potter fans like yourself. So if you are a member, know that that means so incredibly much to Blake and I. It truly makes a difference for this mom and pop podcast shop. And so I just wanted to remind y'all that that's what it's brought to you by. So
yeah, we're here, man. We're here because of all the nerds that are over there trying to make this work for us.
All right.
So thank you.
So let's dive into this episode.
Yeah, so I really like this episode.
This chapter. You can tell we've been talking about
gracious.
TV a lot. But do you like that it's, you know, going back to your original question, how do we feel about it starting in the ministry? How did you feel? I didn't get to hear your opinion
on
that.
Putting into context, like, yes, this is still from Harry's POV. It absolutely is. You cannot say that it's not. However, you're right, Mary. This chapter really could be called The Woes of the Weasleys and not just Mrs. Weasley. And having said that, I get why it was not part of the last chapter, because Arthur was the one that was outside of the courtroom. He wasn't in there, right? So, yes, this is still from Harry's POV, and we really dig into Harry's POV in this chapter.
Yes, we do.
But it's more about the effect of Harry on the Weasleys as opposed to anything else, right? And when you start looking at this chapter from that point of view, yes, it may seem like a little, I don't want to say, it may seem a little stilted, like it may feel like, okay, we're starting and then like, okay, we're stopping and
we're
starting
where we ended last
time. Yeah, and then we're going into the house and then we're doing this and then we're doing that. Like, okay, it's just one step forward and then stop and then like camp out and then, you know, so I could see how that would look. But I actually quite like it because as we've been saying, I think throughout this entire podcast from day one, this world is much larger than just Harry Potter, right? It's Harry Potter, the person, the character. There are things that go well beyond what's happening to him, and we have the different perspective. I mean, yeah, we do it for fun and we like to laugh about it and everything, but the original idea behind the different perspective was there are things that are happening outside of Harry. People look in, they go, and they must have an opinion, right? And there are effects of all of these, and we get a chance to see that through Arthur, right, number one, but also Mrs. Weasley, and then Fred and George, and what am I, the next door neighbor, and like the whole thing. I quite like this chapter, and we really get a chance to get into the pathos for Harry even amidst all of that. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is a great chapter for me.
Agreed. A lot of people, this is one of their top favorite chapters in the series.
It's
just
awesome.
Because it truly helps you feel and love Molly Weasley a bit more. This is where it takes it. If you didn't know that this was the emo Harry book, this is the chapter where you know. It is mentioned multiple times how discouraged, upset, crabby essentially Harry is. You know, and people are trying to cheer him up and it just does not go as planned.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I did love, of course, is as Harry's leaving and he meets up with Arthur, and Arthur's in shock that it was a full hearing with the Wizarding Nemad.
Yeah.
They walk and they see Lucius Malfoy.
Oh.
Standing there with Cornelius Fudge.
Oh, I love this little bit.
And he calls him Patronus Potter.
Oh,
well, well, well. Patronus Potter.
All I could see is Jason Isaacs just delivering this. And I wish that this line was in the film.
Mm-hmm.
That is a perfect Lucius Malfoy line.
Mm-hmm.
I love Lucius Malfoy.
I know you do.
He is awesome because he is both parts pathetic and scary, right? Like, not a good dude. Not a good dude. And I think we all kind of, especially in the films, we all kind of look at Lucius as a pathetic kind of character by the end.
By the end.
Yeah. But I think we all kind of forget how intimidating this character is.
Yes.
And this especially is one of those moments, because it's even said in the book where it's like, the last time Harry saw this guy, you saw his piercing eyes through what,
the Death Eater mask.
The Death Eater mask.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying.
And Harry has reported this. He knows that Cornelius Fudge has the report that Dumbledore would have shared with him. Voldemort came back. Here are the people that Harry would have recognized.
Yep.
And there's Cornelius Fudge just chilling.
Just chilling.
As Lucius Malfoy is making digs at a 15-year-old boy. A 15-year-old boy who was just tried by the full Wizarding Nemad. And Lucius Malfoy is calling him names.
And it wasn't just tried by the Wizarding Nemad. It was like, this was Fudge's, like, this was his deal.
Yeah.
He was going to make this happen.
I also thought it was an interesting thing when he says, the minister was just telling me about your lucky escape, Potter, drawled Mr. Malfoy. Quite astonishing, the way you continue to wriggle out of very tight holes. Snake-like, in fact.
Oh.
And the word snake-like is italicized and capitalized. Not the entire word, but the first letter is capitalized.
Yeah.
Why would he use that adjective of snake-like, in fact, as you wriggle out of very tight holes?
Well, I think it's probably a reference, obviously, to Nagini and what Harry had witnessed. I'm sure that Lucius is well aware of what Harry has witnessed in his dreams, you know, especially considering the connection between Harry and Voldemort. And obviously what transpired at the end of book four, right? So I think that's very purposeful to be in there.
I also wondered if it was him trying to remind Cornelius that there's been rumors that Harry is a Purseltongue.
Absolutely.
You know, just to like lay it out there, like, ooh, look at you. Like, granted, the Malfoys are in the Slytherin house, XYZ, but just to continue to feed those negative thoughts of Potter, that Potter was worried about.
Mm-hmm.
They thought Potter might be the one who opened the Chamber of Secrets, you know, just to plant more doubt.
This whole scene is just full of subtext, right? It's full of everything that isn't said.
And then he digs at him. He digs at Arthur.
Right.
Because he's like, oh, Arthur, what are you doing here? Oh, I work here.
Yeah.
Not here, surely, said Mr. Malfoy, raising his eyebrows and glancing toward the door over Mr. Weasley's shoulder. I thought you were up on the second floor. Don't you do something that involves sneaking Muggle artifacts home and bewitching them? Now, mind you, not only are we on level 9, which is where they have the full trial, but this is also where the prophecy is being held.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, this is what I love about what the author's doing. And for those of you who haven't read the books, as we've said before, we'll say it again, this is a spoilerific podcast. So as long as you're here, just know we're going to drop bombs. But like, Lucius Malfoy is there, to do a little checking in with Cornelius Fudge, but also to be checking to make sure things are kind of working in Voldemort's favor towards where they're heading. So it's just a really interesting thing that we are meant to To think one thing, but yet when you read it back and you say, oh, Lucius Malfoy was on level 9.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but this is extraordinary planning by the author, because once we get to the end of the book and we have Dumbledore's army fighting
grown-ups. Yeah.
We already have a really well-established map. You know, even if it's just a subconscious awareness of the Ministry of Magic, where things are, how they're laid out, when they're moving in between the hallways, and you're like, okay, I know that we're on this level, and oh yeah, that level is right above or right below where we were in the beginning of the book, and like, you have a really well-established thought about, okay, I know where I am. Like, and that is paramount to any kind of storytelling, right? Because not only is it required from authors, but especially from like directors for television or movies. Like, you have to know where you are.
Yes.
If you don't know where you are at all times, unless it's purposeful, then you're lost.
Then you're thrown off and you can't pay attention to what they're trying to show you on screen or in the book.
Right, because your brain is so busy trying to get its bearings and have an understanding of like, okay, where am I? Mm-hmm. How do I relate to all of this? This is spectacular planning. And that's why I'm saying this chapter is full of all the things that are unsaid.
Agreed.
The subtext here is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, and one of the great pieces of subtext is the fact that Lucius Malfoy, as you said, Mary, is there. Mm-hmm. How much influence Lucius Malfoy has, that he's still running around.
Yes.
How much infiltration the Death Eaters already have into the Ministry of Magic.
Yep.
What that means for Harry. And even though later on they say, oh, well, yeah, you know, we got a head start. We got this and we got that. Uh-uh. You don't have a head start. It's going to end up the same exact way, because you just seen it right here at the beginning of the chapter.
Yes.
And maybe that's the reason why this needed to be included in this particular chapter, right? Because it's meant to show you they think they got it under control, but they very clearly don't.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, even within this too, Harry begins to say, like, how is Lucius Malfoy, who I have come out and clearly reported as a Death Eater when Voldemort came back, how is he here? And Harry says, could Cornelius Fudge potentially be under the Imperius curse?
Yes.
I mean, we just learned about the forgivable curses in book 4. We learned that you can Imperio. We talked about how this was a big thing that the Death Eaters were doing, and also that a lot of Death Eaters pretended they were.
Yeah.
So I love that also this is put in, because we as the readers need to know, no. There's no wiggle room for Fudge. As we go forward and he puts Dolores Umbridge into this classroom, into Hogwarts, that this is a corrupt politician.
Yeah, he's very much complicit.
There is no Imperio going on here. And I thought that was a really smart thing. Still, I believe it would be really hard. You know, like, how do you know? Do they go through different tests? Is there a little waterfall kind of like at Gringotts as you walk into the building? You know, just different things like that, that I almost as a reader now wish we had a bit more of, to understand how would you make sure that it wasn't we know as readers because we're told, but I'm just saying that to me, if I lived then and there, I would want extra precautions that I could
absolutely
say, for sure, we know that there's no Imperius curse.
Well,
going on.
But the other thing too is we have to recognize that even though we're reading this, we are still very much mm-hmm. in Harry's POV. So we're biased because of that. We already have this sense of distrust, by the way, rightfully earned distrust.
Correct.
But the world writ large does not have that distrust. So there would not be a necessity for that kind of waterfall, if you will, right? Because why would we even think about it like pre-9/11, right? Mm-hmm. Why would we need to go through a metal detector? Like, why would we ever need to take our shoes off when we go into an airport, right? Like, or before we get on a... No. Why do we have to separate the gates from when people enter? Like, no, you just go up. You say hi to your family. Like, so there's just no need for it, right? Mm-hmm. Because everybody thinks Voldemort's not around. Mm-hmm. So why would anybody be doing this Imperius curse?
Yeah.
Right? So you know, for those of you who are younger listeners, you don't remember what it was like before.
Just 9/11. Watch Love Actually.
Yes.
Okay. When the voiceover is like, there's nothing more amazing than watching people at an airport and people are like rubbing and hugging everybody yes. as they come out the doors. Just watch Love Actually when you're older, because that's not really an appropriate movie for young people.
Yeah.
But if, yeah. It was very, very different.
Or just ask your parents what it was like at the airports yes. before September 11th, 2001, and they will tell you exactly what I'm about to tell you. It was nothing like this. It was very lax, and there was no security. Anyway, I guess what I'm getting at is this. There was just no need for it, and that goes to show you how little... Everybody is how very how lax all of this is, and why it must be so easy for the Death Eaters to just wiggle their way into the Ministry of yes. Magic. And I also want to just call this out, and I know I said it before, but I have to call it out again. This must be terrifying for Harry. Like, seeing this guy, the last time that he saw him, Cedric was dead. And this was an adult who by all accounts could have been like, yeah, no, we can't go killing kids.
Yep.
Like, but he was all too happy to just let the spare die, right? Kill the spare. I kind of wish the author leaned into that more.
I mean, this is also the guy that caused the Chamber of Secrets to be opened.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think we need to lean into it more, because as a book reader, we've had so much stuff against Lucius Malfoy that I think it's okay.
I think
in general, all the feelings he's going through, you know, we're starting this chapter as he's finishing up the hearing, and the person who he has put his faith and trust in, Dumbledore, just walked out on him without saying goodbye, without even telling Arthur Weasley that he was cleared of all charges. So now he's just like, does anybody have my back? All of these adults suck, except for the Weasleys. Like, I am alone, except for the Weasleys. So I just, you know, it's just... You can't trust anyone, and you can't trust these adult figures and the people who are supposed to be protecting you. So you feel bad for Harry, because the floor just keeps getting ripped underneath him.
Well, you know, Mary, you are the consummate Gryffindor. So I will ask you, if you were Harry at this point and going through all that he's gone through, and then he was face to face with Lucius Malfoy, and let's just say that you were Harry. How would you feel if you were Harry at
I would
this
have called
point?
Him a name back. I would have been like, oh, it's Patronus Potter. And be like, yeah, it's Mask Malfoy. Whatevs. I can do alliteration too. Bring
yeah.
It.
I guess that's...
Dark Mark Malfoy. You're so smart.
Would you be scared? Would you be angry?
No, I'd be angry. I'd be very angry. Dumbledore left. I just had to fight while I was saying the truth. Nobody's believing me. And now a Death Eater is talking to the Minister of Magic.
And he's right here in front of me.
Yeah, making fun of me.
Yeah, like...
Telling me I'm snake-like. Oh, I would be very angry. I was feeling Harry in this chapter.
Right.
And then he goes home. He goes back home. And Ron's pumped. Yay, I knew it. You always get away with stuff, is what Ron says. Not just like, I had faith in you, man. It's, you always get away with stuff. Hermione says they were bound to clear you, but she looked positively faint with anxiety. And she was holding a shaking hand over her eyes. Mrs. Weasley's wiping her face. Fred and George and Ginny were doing a war dance. Okay. Harry says, everyone seems quite relieved, though, considering they all knew I'd get off. Meaning... Wow, I thought you guys like honestly believed I was going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I come home to see that there is minimal belief that that was actually going to happen. You all look way too relieved. Hermione's hands are shaking. Mrs. Weasley is crying. Obviously, you guys weren't being honest with me about how big of a deal this was. Thanks a lot. Nobody prepped me. Nobody practiced my script with me. Dumbledore came in and laughed. Like, you know, I know he's saying it smiling, but there's a little jab in that. There's a little jab. Everyone seems quite relieved, though, considering they all knew I'd get off. That's sarcasm right there from Harry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's definitely a a married that's what response. I would do. Oh yeah! Oh, wow. And since everybody knew I was gonna get off.
Wow, you guys are crying. Really, you were really confident this morning. Makes me feel great. Like I totally trust you too, just like I trust Dumbledore. Awesome. Awesome. We're of course hanging out at Grimwald Place. People are celebrating. They're doing a whole bunch of cleaning, and we get a little bit more about the conversation with Sirius. How he's been kind of crabby, and Hermione thinks, I think it was really because he did want you to fail and lose, so you'd have to live here with him.
Yeah.
He's not expressing that much. We also learned that Sirius had no way of ever becoming a prefect.
Oh, it's great. I was in too much trouble. Me and your father, too many detentions, the whole thing. Right. Oh.
So we're just continuing to grow on the character building of Sirius. What's fun, though, is that this is said through other people, pretty much, yes. Right? It's Hermione making observations about Sirius. It's Lupin saying, oh, no, he was a troublemaker. Like, I was made prefect with the hopes that I could keep them in line, and I failed miserably.
This is why the characters are so well crafted in this story, and not just this book, but the Harry Potter story in general. The fact that you can look at Lupin and immediately see, oh yeah, no, that tracks.
That, yes, exactly.
That 100% tracks.
You know what also 100% tracks is Ron complaining about cleaning too much. That would be
tracks.
Hermione then saying, because he says, oh my gosh, I've been cleaning so much. Now I know how a house elf feels. And I love this because I actually tell our children, I am not your house elf.
Please stop
treating me like a house elf. And then they spit it back at us.
Oh,
like, when we're 100%. Like, you need to go and clean your room. They're like, I'm not a house elf. We're like, no, but you're the elf of your own room. Okay.
You have to clean your own room.
Put your socks away, please, house elf.
Do anything, please.
And Hermione jumps in. Oh, you know, we should do some more spew stuff.
Yeah. Makes you think that maybe you should take spew more seriously. No, Hermione, spew still sucks.
Yeah. Book lists arrive, and we have a shiny, happy moment finally in this chapter. This is in Mary and Blake, we often do GBG. It's a good, bad, great. It's a nice little Oreo, and yes. It like sneaks a little bad in there. This is emo Harry book. This is crabby Harry. So it is the opposite generally in this book. You are lucky if you get a glimmer of happiness. That glimmer of happiness sandwiched between the hearing and Lucius Malfoy and then the Boggart is Ron getting his final moment, his first moment to shine by getting his prefect badge, which, mind you, it's ripped away from him half the time because people don't even believe that he got it.
Oh,
so,
I know.
Which just adds so much humor. But we get this moment of happiness for Ron.
Yeah, it's great. And like, he doesn't believe it, but then he gets it and he's like, he's just over the moon. And even Hermione herself is just really bad at holding back her disbelief that that Ron is going to be a prefect. And you know, when she gets it, it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Fred says,
Hermione.
There's been a mistake. No one in their right mind would make Ron a prefect.
Oh, man. And then they talk about the detentions and, watch out. Yeah, he's going to give us detention, sure.
Then he says, yeah, you've caused too much trouble, mate. Well, at least one of you's got your priorities right. Love it. They, of course, are also saying that it took so long to get their school list because it was taking so long to get a new defense against the dark arts teacher.
Yes.
And I loved how Harry said, one sacked, one dead, one's memory removed, and one locked in a trunk for 9 months. So I see why it took so long, basically, to get a new teacher and get these things here. So we get the prefect badge.
Yes.
And Ron is absolutely shocked. Harry is shocked too. Like, we don't get to read his response for quite some time. It's more how he's reacting to everybody else's response that it's not him, that it starts to sink in where it's like, oh God. He even says, I wasn't even thinking about prefect stuff. I was so busy, you know, with Voldemort being back to life and the trial and could I even be at Hogwarts, that he didn't even put two and two together that in his fifth year, this could have been a possibility for him.
Absolutely.
Could you have imagined if Seamus Finnegan had been chosen prefect?
I mean,
that's what they had. They had Harry, Ron, Neville, Seamus, and Dean. Those were your options. Those were your options for Gryffindor House's prefect. I'm absolutely
taking Ron out of all of those. Yep, 100%.
Seamus would be blowing things up.
Yeah.
That's what he would do. If you were being naughty, he'd just be blowing you up.
Yeah, he'd blow you up. And Dean wouldn't care about nothing.
Oh, Dean was too busy snogging.
Yeah, he's got too many things going on. Way too busy snogging. He's way too interested in the girls. And Neville, do you think Neville's going to tell anybody that they got detention?
Neville would have had so many anxious moments just replaying Sorcerer's Stone, Petrificus Totalis.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if I try to stop anybody ever again... The first years know that spell.
So much trauma. So much. And you know what? Hard to blame him. It's hard to blame poor Neville for just being a little reticent when it comes to, you know, asserting any kind of authority over his fellow students.
Mm-hmm. But what I did love is that Molly Weasley didn't bat an eye. She wasn't like, get out of town, it's Ron, just like how the twins and Harry himself and Hermione kind of react shocked. Molly sees her baby boy, because this is her youngest boy, shine from the man that he is, and is so excited, and in the midst forgets that her twins never earned the prefect badge. Oh my gosh, everyone's had it. This is amazing. And then she tells Ron, I'm going to get you a present. And this is such a wonderful moment for Ron, because we went through the whole jealousy thing and like really dealing with being on the lower side of the income percentage. So for him to be able to know that he gets something special for him.
Yeah.
I love this moment for him.
It's a great moment.
I know that we're supposed to be seeing it kind of jealous through Harry's eyes, but as a Ron lover, I'm here for it.
Yeah, no, it's a good moment because he finally gets a chance to say something that he wants. Right, like he's gotten the robes, and he's had the hand-me-down robes, you know, and the dress robes rather, and then the broken wand, and finally he says, "Can I get a new broom?" Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be anything crazy.
It could be the new queen's clean sweep.
Yeah, it's just I just want a broom, and it's such an innocent thing for a kid to just want a thing, right? And finally feel like I'm able to ask for the thing.
Yeah.
You know, especially, as you said, Mary, coming from a demographic that doesn't really have a whole lot of wealth, right? And even Molly's reaction to it, where she kind of has this stutter and a little bit of hesitancy, and she says, of course. Like, because she knows, right? Mm-hmm. She, as the mom, knows, this is a big deal, we got to make this work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how can I tell my kid no?
And of course, it's still a big deal to Hermione. Hermione, who is the best in her class, who gets all the academic accolades. Now she's excited to share this with her parents. So she asks Harry, can I borrow Hedwig to go let them know? Because this is something they'll actually understand. They don't get most of what I do, but this is something they'll understand. And after she gets Hedwig, you know, Harry's like kind of gritting his teeth as he says, yeah, congratulations, wonderful. This is when it starts to sink into Harry.
Yeah. Well, actually, before we get into that, because I really do want to talk about that. Because it's actually my favorite part of this whole chapter. But I do want to talk about this. Molly's reaction. Oh, every one of us was a prefect. And then we get the one where your next door neighbors, right? Okay. As a mom, Mary.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this? And how she just kind of just hops over the twins, and what does that say about her values? Like, it's a funny moment, and I get it, but let's look at it from a different perspective here.
Okay.
Without doing the different perspective, let's look at it from a different perspective and say, okay, yeah, it was funny, but is it?
Okay. So part of me feels like it was never even an option for those two to become a prefect. First, you can't make one without the other. These are twins. Second of all, just their personalities, how often they get in trouble. So this is not their strong suit. It's kind of like having someone who is maybe super artistic or musical, not in the slightest be an athlete, come from a family where they're mostly athletes. And they're just like, oh my gosh, of course our youngest became captain. Everyone has, meaning like everyone who was meant to do that. So, Oh, it stinks because I feel like if this was said next year after the kids have already, after the twins have left school and they're going on for their own things, it would make sense, right? To kind of just throw this in there while they're still students at school was a bit of a dig and an oversight. But on the flip side, these boys have caused her so much stress mm-hmm. that I'm giving her a get out of jail free card.
Oh, man.
You know, as a fellow middle child myself who is frequently overlooked, I will tell you, as I said before, to cue, you know, take my notes from Kelly Clarkson, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I believe, no, I'm serious. As a middle child, it sucks. It sucks to be overlooked. I have a older sister and a younger brother, straight up middle child. My older sister is special needs. My younger brother, he's special in his own ways because he's just bananas and he's a lot. He was a lot growing up. So as a middle child who is self-sufficient, I'm not dying. You know what I mean? They're not dying. They're smart enough to do what they need to do. And they have each other. When you get pushed aside enough, you find your own way. You create your own podcast company.
Sure.
You do the things that you set yourself out to do because you become your best cheerleader. And I think that if Fred and George were coddled as much as Ron is or some of the other Weasleys were, that they would actually not have created their own business and they would have not thought outside the box because they would have been striving to be like just like their older brothers.
Absolutely.
And they would have had all of these identity issues that Ron has. They don't show jealousy.
Yep.
They're like, oh, we don't even care. Like, being a prefect sucks. We actually like making puking pastels. Like,
right.
That's more our jam. So is it a little, it's a little dig, but honestly, I don't think it hurts them that much because it's not something they have weight in.
Yeah. I also wonder, too, though, Mary, if there is a little bit of overcompensation for Ron here because Ron is very clearly, like, I don't want to say forgotten, but, like, there's Ginny, mm-hmm. right? And then there's Bill. And then, but Bill's off doing his own thing. And then there's Charlie, of course, right? And, like, both of them are off doing their own thing.
Yes.
It always kind of, they remind me, like, I remember one of my good buddies, he had a brother and sister that were, like, way older than us. Like, 15 years older than us. And, like, they were just kind of, like, a mystery. We never saw them. We never hung out with them. We never, like, they were out of the house.
Yeah, they were adults.
They and that's what Bill and Charlie are to me. Like, it reminds me of that. And then I wonder, like, okay, we see what Bill and Charlie are doing, and it's not bad, but it's like, did Molly learn anything from that, from those first few experiences? And then did she do any of that, what she learned, and put it on Percy, right? And then if Percy is now doing what he's doing, like, I don't think it's like a coincidence that we have this chapter where Percy ignores his father, right? Like, I don't think that's a coincidence. That's
so why
there for
would
a reason.
Fred and George want to be anything like Percy? Percy stinks in their opinion. So if he was prefect, goodbye.
And that's why I'm wondering, is there a little bit of overcompensation here from Molly to Ron? To she's it's like she's lost her first two. She's very clearly, at least, lost.
She's not. She hasn't lost the first two. It's just that they've grown.
Yeah, they're gone.
And they're no longer in her day-to-day life.
Right, and she very clearly has regrets and sadness
with Percy,
Percy because she even mentions it later on at the end of this chapter. Right, so I don't know. I find it pretty remarkable. Like the difference in how she treats.
I'm not
both
saying
of
it's
them.
Right, but I'm just saying as a middle child who is often overlooked, I do believe that it's made me stronger, and I think that that is why Fred and George are so different because they've been overlooked, and thank goodness they have each other to be each other's cheerleaders.
And I even find it awesome that Harry kind of regrets giving them the money to do, like, that he won from the Triwizard
Because he feels bad going wrong against the parents.
Right. And then, like, putting them in a position where they have to deal with Mundungus Fletcher to kind of, like, bankroll the rest of their endeavors, right? So you have all of that playing together. And I love this chapter for that, right? Because there's just so much swirling about.
What is beautiful is as Harry goes through, and he goes through everything that he's done with Quirrell and Sorcerer's Stone and the Chamber of Secrets, he goes through like, I did this, I did this. Yes, Ron and Hermione were with me a lot of it, but I did this. And yet when Ron comes back upstairs and says, you know, I caught my mom, I got to tell her I wanted the broom. Ron says, so the smile faded off of Ron's face and he says, I never thought it would be me. I thought it would be you.
Yeah.
And Harry says, nah, I've caused way too much trouble. And so they move on from that. So I love that right now in the book, Harry doesn't have this like pitted jealousy aimed at Ron. Mm-hmm. And Ron's just so humble. He's like, oh my God, I'm still shocked. Yeah. Seriously, man, I thought it was going to be you. And then, of course, you know, we have the dinner with everybody, which we kind of talked about a little before with who was prefect, who wasn't prefect. And then we get the Boggart situation.
Before we get into the Boggart situation.
Yeah.
Because we're kind of whistling past my favorite part of this whole chapter.
So sorry. Is it the picture from Mad Eye Moody with all the dead people?
Right. Like I love that too. Mm-hmm. And come on, like I'm super emo too. So I love how Harry recognizes that all those people are dead, and Moody is trying to connect with Harry on a certain level, and Harry's like, yeah. Bro, that sucks. Like,
and it's going to happen again.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
But there's this, and maybe I relate to it just because I think there's something like that exists in all of us. And I know it certainly does in me. There's this little voice in you that you can't help but listen to, right? It's the one that is on both sides of you. It's that jealous part of you that's like, I did all that. Like, mm-hmm. where were they? You know, and then there's another smaller voice in you that kind of tries to fight against that. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I might have brought this up in this podcast before, but I can't remember. But for those of you who remember Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, we do.
Say what you will about the prequels. I thought that movie was pretty good. However, I don't think it did a very good job in getting into the pathos of what Anakin was doing and why he chose to do what he did and the fight, the internal fight that he had within himself. But I remember reading the novelization of Episode 3. And the novelization of Episode 3 was spectacular because it started off with this little voice in Anakin, and it kept telling him all the things that he did wrong, and it kept telling him all the things that Obi-Wan was doing against him, and like, and showing him all of his fears. And he in the novelization, he called it the dragon. Like, there's there's a small dragon in me that keeps saying all of these things. And finally, eventually, when he does succumb to it, it's the dragon. And they likened it to when it's pitch black and there's a match or like a candle that's been lit. And in the beginning of the book, it talks about how the darkness completely surrounds the candle, the flame. And at the end of the book, it's recontextualized to say, no matter how powerful the dark may be, even a small flame from a candle can hold it back. And I just remember thinking about that. And I remember thinking, wow, this internal struggle that he has, this voice that Anakin has, is something that I could latch on to. Mm-hmm. And I find the same exact thing here for Harry, that struggle where he's fighting with himself and trying to convince himself of one thing, hearing another, and then acting in a different way. What a great struggle for that character. And what a great struggle for all of us to lean into. And I don't think we get much of that at all in the previous books.
Not that I can really recollect. And this is the moody. The moodiness comes on. I don't mean mad eye.
Yeah, no. And I like that we're able to connect with Harry mm-hmm. on that level, right? Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, continue on.
No, please. And then he goes on, and Moody, as we said earlier, thinks he's going to brighten his spirits and brings out this picture. Come here, I've got something that might interest you. And he finds from an inner pocket of his robes, he pulls out a very tattered old wizarding photograph. The original Order of the Phoenix, growled Moody. Found it last night when I was looking for my spare invisibility cloak, seeing as how Podmore hasn't had the manners to return the best one. Thought people might like to see it. There's a crowd of people waving. And he says, that's me, unnecessarily. The Moody in the picture was unmistakable, though his hair was slightly less gray and his nose was still intact. There's Dumbledore beside me, Deedleus Diggle. There's Marlene McKinnon. She was killed 2 weeks after this photo was taken, and they got her whole family. That's Frank and Alice Longbottom. So now Harry's like, okay, I already know about them. This is awkward. And there's Marlene McKinnon, who was killed 2 weeks after this. This sucks. Ugh. There's Emmeline Vance. You've met her. And there's Lupin, obviously. And there's Fenwick. He copped it too. We only ever found bits of him. Shift aside there. Here he is, just like, boop, boop, boop. Oh yeah, we found bits of him. Okay, thank you. Edgar Bones, Brother Vermilia Bones, they got him. He was a great wizard. Sturgis Podmore, blimey, he looks young. Dearborn vanished 6 months after this. We never found his body. Hagrid, Elpheus Doge, let's see, Gideon Pruitt, it took 5 Death Eaters to kill him, and his brother Fabian, there's Dumbledore's brother. Like, he goes on and on and on. It's like, oh, they're still alive. Up, they're dead. They're still alive, but like in a hospital still. We never found that person. We found pieces of him. They're like just so much badness.
But
and
you,
of course
you
we
can
see
tell,
his family and standing next to Wormtail, and it just sucks.
Yeah, you can tell. I think we've all kind of been there, like when we're looking at pictures from like, let's say high school. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, man, you wouldn't believe what happened to this guy. Like, this guy went off and did X, Y, and Z thing. You
I
know,
mean,
like,
even, like, today is our anniversary. We're recording this. And I was looking back through, like, photos of our wedding day. And even then, there's been people who've passed.
Yep.
Young people and older people who've passed. There's been multiple people who've broken up, whether they were dating or they were married with divorces. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm looking back, I'm like, oh, don't want to look at that picture anymore. Oh, I'm going to have to edit that if I share that online,
right,
you know?
Right.
So looking back at older pictures sometimes is awkward in general, but when people have died tragically, tortured, bits and pieces of them, Moody just didn't think this one through.
Well, I don't think
the best present.
Yeah, I think he looks at it like a thing of catharsis, maybe. Mm. Right? Like, because even though,
or a reminder of what we're fighting for, and that this was the original one, and they were able to stop him then, and we can stop him now.
Yes. So, like, I see what Moody is doing. Like, I get it. You're right, Mary. I don't think he's thinking it through in terms of showing this to Harry. And then here's the other thing, too. There's James and Lily, and then there's Peter Pettigrew, right? Like, this is the guy that made my parents dead, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, either directly or indirectly, whatever. Doesn't matter. Like, that surely is not going to bring up good feelings for him. So why do you think, is it just because Moody wasn't paying enough attention or he doesn't have the social awareness?
I don't think he has a social awareness.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't necessarily to cheer Harry up because he does say, I think you're going to find this interesting. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think he has the awareness. Let's be real. He's not like frequently around 15-year-olds.
Right.
You know, young people in general. Like this just isn't his thing.
So what do you think was the ultimate purpose of him showing Harry the thing? Like, why do you think Moody did it?
Just because he wanted to.
Okay.
You found it last night. Yeah. Hey, you might think this is cool.
All right. Fair enough.
Then we go to the Boggarts. And Harry goes upstairs and he finds Mrs. Weasley sobbing. Looks like Ron is dead. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. Now it turns into bills. And, you know, Harry knows it's not Ron because Ron was just downstairs.
Right.
And Harry is trying, Mrs. Weasley, just get out of here. Let someone else. And what's interesting is that Harry doesn't ridiculous. He doesn't step in and do it.
Oh, interesting.
Even though he has done this before.
But it's Lupin who is the one who
does
it.
It's Lupin.
Right?
Yeah, and I thought that was really interesting that Harry didn't. But I don't think Harry was emotionally ready to do it. I think after looking at that photograph, having his own sadness, who knows if Harry would have emotionally been able to do it, or if he would have just seen the dead, you know, his dead parents or something. So
right.
I'm partially glad that he couldn't, because of course he didn't handle the Dementor one very easily.
Well, yeah. Do you think he would see a Dementor again?
I think after seeing this picture, he would have seen his parents dead again.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like, he just saw it, and then he walks upstairs.
Or yeah, but is that his biggest fear?
I think he would have seen Voldemort. I mean, now that he knows what Voldemort looks like. Because he didn't know before, because he was a baby. Now I think he'd see Voldemort. Yep. That's what I think.
I think that's a great question. I would love to ask this of the nerds. Do you think that Harry would still see a Dementor, or do you think he would see Voldemort? Because I still kind of think he would see a Dementor.
Maybe. It's just, he just saw them and he was able to do it and he wasn't like peeing his pants. Mm-hmm. And he knows he can get rid of them now with Expecto Patronum pretty well.
Yeah, true. Good point.
And he sees them again in the future and is able to deal with them. So I think the unknown of Voldemort, or just knowing what he came from, being emotionally low, seeing that picture, I feel like it can change. Obviously, yep. it can change because of Molly's. So, you know, Molly really goes in, like, half of my family's in the order. I'm not even talking to Percy. He could die throughout all of this. Who's going to take care of the young kids?
Right.
So we really get an insight into Molly Weasley and how sad she is. And of course, at the end of this is the quote that I read with Harry just thinking about everything and his scar hurts. And of course, the first sign of madness, talking to your own head, said a sly voice from the empty picture on the wall as he's leaving. It's just very interesting that his scar is hurting.
Right. And then we also get some setup too, right? We get some setup here from Molly about, hey, all my family, one of these people could end up dead, if not all of them could end up dead. And, you know, by the end of the series, she's not wrong, right? Especially, and again, because we're spoiler podcasts here, it's, you know, there is perfect reason for her to assume that at least one of them could die. And again, not wrong, right? So, all right, so that is that for this chapter. My love, we have the different perspective. Would you like to do that?
Yes.
All right, let's get it done.
Holy cricket, you're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Lupin.
Remus.
Yeah.
How you been, buddy?
I've had better days.
I saw that you did a little bit of a ridiculous, and you're not afraid of the moon so much now. Like, I feel like you could just ignore it. You're good.
That's nothing for me.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You know.
Sure. What do you think about good old Ron? Getting the prefect.
You know, I always liked Ron. Yeah. And I kind of saw him like me. Uh-huh. So I'm excited. I'm hoping to spend a little time with him. I will tell you, being a prefect is one of the highest points of my life.
Really?
I mean, once you're bit by a werewolf, things kind of go downhill from there. So being a prefect is definitely, like, I feel like I kind of peaked.
Yeah, you prefect. Were like a high school quarterback, you know, at that time.
/ werewolf.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a thing. You've seen the video Thriller and the Letterman jacket.
Yeah.
I mean, that was essentially me, but that was something I was really proud of. So much of me I had to hide and, you know, as an inconvenience. But being prefect was really a cool moment for me. So to know that someone that I get to see regularly, it's not one of those other kids, the one that blows things up, the one that's snogging, the scared one.
Yeah.
You know, because I was their teacher.
Yeah.
I know Dumbledore made the right choice. I would have picked Ron too. I know these kids really well.
Definitely don't want to do the snogging kid.
No. I mean, he
would leverage that in ways that we don't.
I don't think so. I think Dean Thomas is a really cool kid, and I like him. But I'm just saying, Ron's not getting any action anytime soon. He can focus on the things that he needs to do. But we got that, and then I got to whip out the ridiculous. You know, there's times where I don't feel like I get to be as heroic as other members of the Order because they get to go to the Ministry of the Magic. They get to do different things. I don't really get to do that.
No, you don't.
I don't have a real job anymore.
Nope.
You know, I don't really feel worthy. Sirius and I sometimes have heart-to-hearts about what it's like just staying in Grimwald Place and not really, like, contributing the way that we want to. But when I got to save Molly from that ridiculous bugger, get it?
Hey!
I felt good, man.
You know, Remus, I got a question for you. This is a little bit of a serious question.
Hey, but I'm bumping.
And you know what? I said that and didn't even realize it works on multiple levels.
You're welcome.
Here's a Sirius question for you. Do you think Sirius is assuming a little too much of Harry? Do you find that Hermione in her... in her assessment
of your friend Sirius. I don't know what you're talking about. 15-year-olds don't talk to me.
In her assessment.
But you're expecting
that
I know?
I've heard through the grapevine.
You mean what Molly has said in front of Sirius and all the adults?
I'm just... Perhaps.
Okay.
Perhaps.
You're asking me as my best friend who's still alive.
Maybe takes Harry's existence like he is James a little bit too much there? What do you think about that?
I think that that man can do no wrong. He learned how to be a dog when I was at my lowest moment. For that, he has my back. And I don't care if he's emotionally stunted. He's gone through a lot. I'm a werewolf.
Yes.
Sirius has gone through more than me.
Wow. That's saying something.
Exactly. So do I think that he's emotionally stunted a little bit? I'm not even going to go there. Best friends for life, man. Furry BFFs. Best friends for life. Best furry friends for life. That's what I am. I'm not going to say that out loud.
BFFF.
Yes. He's
best
my furry,
furry friends forever.
We love him. Love him like a fellow pup litter mate. End scene.
Oh, pup litter mate. Oh, my goodness. All right, Marvin. You ready to close this bad boy out? All right, let's do it. Here we go. Pup litter mate.
Thank you all so incredibly much for tuning into this episode of the Potterverse. Blake and I thoroughly enjoyed this chapter, in case you couldn't tell. So many fun things to delve into, and this book in general has a lot. So make sure you hit that subscribe button in your podcast app of choice. If you haven't yet left us a written review in Apple Podcasts, there is still time, my friends. There is still time.
There's always time.
There's
for a
always time. And we really appreciate the reviews. You read them and they warm our hearts.
Always. I'm not going to say that I check them all the time. But I check them often. And whenever I see a new one, it I always tell Mary, I always let her know. And
there's one that's by someone named Emo Elephant, which I just feel like is so fitting because we talked about Emo Harry a lot.
Absolutely.
And they said, one of my favorite podcasts. This is the first podcast I've listened to, and I have loved it.
Oh, wow.
The banter between Mary and Blake is funny and lighthearted. Definitely would recommend for Potterheads.
Oh.
So thank you so much, Emo Elephant.
Emo Elephant, you're bringing it.
Right? You can't beat that name. On that note, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake, and I'm not a next door neighbor.
Mischief managed.